This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our show today is all about Hairspray, the original film and the new one.
Hey there, teenage Baltimore! Don't change that channel, because it's time for the Corny Collins Show! Brought to you by Ultra Clutch Hairspray. Though every afternoon when the clock strikes four, a crazy bunch of kids crash through that door, yeah.
Hairspray is set in Baltimore in the early 60s when teenagers rush home after school to watch the Corny Collins dance show, a local show that's like American Bandstand without the big stars. Tracy Turnblad is a fat girl whose dream is to dance on the show, but being fat isn't cool. Later we'll hear a 1988 interview with John Waters about writing and directing the original Hairspray. His film was adapted into the hit Broadway musical that became the basis of the new film. My guest, Adam Shankman, directed and choreographed the new Hairspray. Before making Hairspray, Shankman choreographed music videos and films, including Boogie Nights and Stuck on You. In his new film, Hairspray, Tracy is played by newcomer Nikki Blonsky. Her father is played by Christopher Walken. Her mother is played by John Travolta in drag and in a fat suit. In this scene, Tracy has just told her mother she wants to audition to dance on the Corny Collins show. Her mother is ironing as she responds.
No one is auditioning for anything in this household.
But why not? Why
because
not?
Dancing is not your future. One day you're going to own Edna's Occidental Laundry.
I don't want to be a laundress. I want to be famous.
Well, if you want to be famous, learn how to take blood out of car upholstery. That's a skill you can take right to the bank.
Hey. What's all this rocks
word.
In here?
Daddy, tomorrow I'm auditioning to dance on a TV show.
No, she is not. First the hair, now this.
But all the kids are batting up their hair now, hon.
You're no help.
It's ratting, Daddy. And our First Lady, Jacqueline Kennedy, does it.
I don't believe that.
What do you mean you don't believe that? How else would it look that way?
I believe that it is naturally stiff.
Adam Shankman, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, you're good friends with the songwriters who did the songs for Hairspray. And you've said that you've seen the Broadway show about 20 times.
Yeah,
so
I have.
When you set out to make the movie and you already had the show so much in your head, what did you do to kind of get rid of the show and start fresh with the movie? Or maybe not. Maybe you felt like you should do what the show did.
Well, no. I it was really interesting. When I got the job, this is going to sound so sad and lame, but I got John Waters' email address because that's where I needed to start, because all roads of Hairspray lead back to John Waters. So I got his email address and I think I basically typed him, "Dear Mr. Waters, my name is Adam Shankman. You don't know me, but I've been hired to direct and choreograph the new adaptation of Hairspray. I hope you don't mind." And he emailed me back like, "Let's have lunch tomorrow," because I was in Baltimore producing a movie there when I got the job. And we had lunch the next day, and he said de facto, "Don't do what I did. Don't do what the play did. You got to do your own thing." And I really took that very seriously, and I thought, okay, great. This is now being given, like, permission by God to go out and do my thing, you know, at least the God of Hairspray.
Since Hairspray is a period piece set in the 60s about a TV dance show, the choreography had to be tied, at least the choreography that the teenagers do in the context of the dance show, had to be very 60s. So what are some of the things that you watched to get inspiration for the choreography?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I've choreographed a lot of material that sort of was from this period, and I happen to love it. And there's a lot of different things that I drew inspiration from. You know, I'm a huge fan, you're going to laugh, at like the whole Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello movies.
The beach movies?
The beach movies. And I've watched a lot of Elvis. But, you know, even going back to Bye Bye Birdie and, you know, the theatricalized versions of things from this era. You know, I've watched a lot of old American Bandstand. And then I watched crazy like Hullabaloo, which was all Michael Bennett choreography, so it was really odd and kind of fabulous and brilliant. But where I started out as a visual base was there was a great documentary called Shake, Rattle, and Roll which was a documentary about the Buddy Dean Show, which is the show that the Corny Collins Show in Hairspray is based upon. And it was the show that John Waters used to watch growing up, and the kids that he knew in high school that this whole thing is based on. The whole, you know, Hairspray started with an essay or an article, I'm sorry, that John wrote called The Nicest Kids in Town. And then it was published, and then he kind of blew it up, and it became Hairspray. And it was all about the kids on this show. So I watched that show, and it's really, the dancing is really dull, but it's the little dances of the era. And they're mostly like little repetitive steps, like the mashed potato or the pony or, you know, twisting and stuff like that. And so I basically sat there and keyed all of my choreography using that as a base and then blowing it up to musical size.
One of the things in the story Hairspray is that, you know, the Corny Collins dance show is a very white show, but once a week it's Negro Day. It's Negro Day. And all like the black kids who are dancers get to be on the show, and there's a black host instead of Corny Collins. She's played by Queen Latifah in the movie. And so what are some of the differences between like the white choreography that you did and the black choreography that you did?
Well, one of my associate choreographers, Jamal Sims, who is African American, and his family had danced on a show like the Corny Collins Show. And so, like, I think his mother and father, his aunts and uncles. And he went over to their house and he filmed them doing the dances that they were doing, one called the Hully Gully, the Fly, the Slop. And those had a lot of more soul. They had a lot more hip action. They were looser. The white kids dancing was very uptight. It was very tight in the core of your body. It was very centered. Whereas a lot of the African-American style stuff was very loose. And I love that because it was all of the same era, but it was, you know, it in and of itself was actually different. And so he filmed them doing that. And there's a number in the movie called Run and Tell That, which is literally taking a bunch of those steps and linking them all together and then just kind of pushing the size of the steps a little bit bigger. But it's all authentic steps, really, from the era.
Did you ever want to be on a teen dance show when you were growing up?
Oh, my God. I wanted to do it all, and my parents wouldn't let me. It made me so upset. They kept saying, you need a solid education. I was like, you just let me be on a commercial. Just for Lucky Charms, anything. Just please. I would have killed. My dad was producing TV a bit back then, and there was a kid on the Brady Bunch named Robbie Rist who played Oliver, Cousin Oliver. And I knew Robbie and this girl, Kim Richards, who was on Escape from Witch Mountain. There were these child actors that I knew that were kind of in my life. And all I wanted to do was be them. And my parents wouldn't let me. So it really bummed me out. But I didn't actually start dancing until I was 18.
That's really old.
Yeah. How sad is that? That's really old. To be 18 to start dancing, but it really is, in fact, if you're really training. But I was
well, particularly because you can do splits and all of that. I mean,
I can still do that, but that's like a cheap parlor trick for me. I was a competitive gymnast when I was a kid, so my body has certain kind of facilities that you know allow me to still have that kind of flexibility, which is weird, I think, even to me. But it's just the way my body's built.
So what were you dancing when you were in high school?
When I was 17, I graduated high school, and I moved to Minneapolis and I joined a repertory theater company called the Children's Theater Company in school. And they do in repertory a lot of original shows, and most of them are musicals. And so I found myself in the company dancing a lot and suddenly getting lead roles as the dancer in them, but I still hadn't taken any classes. I just sort of had this natural ability. And then I decided that dancing was kind of mostly what I should be doing. And I auditioned for all of the big schools, NYU and Juilliard and North Carolina, and I actually got into all of them in the dance programs, including Juilliard. I got into having never taken a dance class in my life, which was crazy. It was like flash dance.
Oh.
It was ridiculous. Yeah.
Let me get back to Hairspray for a second.
Yeah.
Now, in Hairspray, I know that John Travolta was cast before you were actually hired to direct and choreograph the film. Now, in the original movie, the John Waters movie, the mother, you know, the very heavy mother, Edna Turnblad, is played by Divine. Now, Divine was a nearly 300-pound man who was always the leading lady while he was alive in John Waters movies. And in the stage version, the mother was played by Harvey Fierstein, who is not quite as overweight as Divine by any means, but, you know, he can put on the weight. And he's very gay and very out. And whereas Travolta is a kind of, you know, fairly trim man who's straight. How'd you feel about casting like a straight, you know, reasonably trim man in the part?
Well,
and because Travolta has to wear a lot of like prosthetics.
There's a few reasons for all that. In the tradition of Hairspray, which started with John, obviously casting Divine, it's one of my favorite things that Edna is played by a man because it's anarchistic. It's basically a lot of the point of it. It's the don't judge a book by its cover, you know, credo in the Hairspray kind of legacy. And I love that part of it because it's just, it's such a nose thumb to the world. And when they told me about that they were talking to John, I strangely immediately understood, because knowing that they were wanting to make a big commercial hit movie out of this and it's a musical, what man are you going to go to that's the biggest musical star that we have? And because of Grease and Saturday Night Fever, it is John Travolta. Grease is the highest grossing musical of all time at this point. And so I thought, oh, God, that makes sense. And the thing that I loved about it was that I could now get Edna dancing. Because we haven't seen John Travolta dance since well, Stayin' Alive, actually, but it's the sequel to Saturday Night Fever.
You don't need to go there.
Yeah, but, you know, but he was dancing, and I thought this is fantastic. And then I started thinking about Fantasia, the cartoon of Fantasia and those dancing hippos, and I was like, this is awesome, because what it could be is, like, Edna, you know, dances as if she's weightless, and I thought that was sort of thrilling, just the possibilities of it. So I never went to sort of a dark place. I mean, the interesting thing is that I think why people have a bit of a problem with it, if there is a problem with it, is because both Harvey and Divine, I think, were generally thought of in their way as like character actors. Even though they played leads in what they did, they're still not traditional leading men. John is a very traditional leading man and has been so for a long time. Very on the testosterone-fueled part, but that also makes it more fun. Once again, it plays with the anarchy of the piece.
Well, there's a great soft shoe in the movie between Travolta and Christopher Walken, who plays Edna's husband. And I love watching both Travolta dance and Christopher Walken dance. I love watching Christopher Walken move.
Did you ever see Pennies from Heaven?
I love his scene in that.
God, he's so amazing. That's why I really wanted Chris so much, because besides the fact that he in himself is like a novelty shop to a certain extent, he's just such an unusual and individual, brilliant and interesting actor who makes what seem like crazy choices, and they all fall together in the most brilliant way. To have that kind of randomness out there dancing, the two of them, I mean, sometimes I'd have to step away and go, what the hell am I shooting?
Can you talk a little bit about what you put together for the two of them?
There's a number in Hairspray called Timeless to Me, which is a reaffirmation of Edna and Wilbur's love. And I love this so much because it's actually one of the only old-fashioned moments in Hairspray. And the, you know, it's a love story, really, between the two characters. And I got to really play with it. And there's all sorts of great lyrics about, you know, that turn on each other, like, you're like a stinky old cheese deer just getting riper with age, you know. You're like a fatal disease, babe. And if there's no cure, just let this fever rage. They're so connected in their eyes and in the way that they behave with each other. And it's so genuine and loving. And so then when they erupt into the dance, it's just, it's heaven.
Well, why don't we hear the song that Travolta and Christopher Walken sing in the movie version of Hairspray.
Styles keep a-changing, the world's rearranging, but Edna, you're timeless to me. Hemlines are shorter, a beer costs a quarter, but time cannot take what comes free. You're like a stinky old cheese, babe, just getting riper with age. You're like a fatal disease, babe, but there's no cure, so let this fever rage. Some folks can't stand it, say time is a bandit, but I take the opposite view. 'Cause when I need a lift, time brings a gift, another day with you. A twist or a waltz, it's all the same schmaltz, with just a change in the scenery. You'll never be old hat, that's that. You're timeless to me.
Oh, we'll brawl of you.
Feds keep a-fading, Castro's invading, but Wilbur, you're timeless to me. Hairdos are higher, mine feels like barbed wire, but you say I'm chic as can be. You're like a rare vintage ripple, a vintage they'll never forget. So pour me a teeny weeny triple, and we can toast that we ain't dead yet. I can't stop.
What were the pop dances when you were coming of age?
When I was coming of age, oh God, I think when I was coming of age, it was right when breakdancing was starting, you know, the electric boogaloo and all of that. And there was a movie called Breaking Electric Boogaloo, which I loved. And there was a great movie called Fast Forward about, you know, the very beginnings of like pop locking and all of that. That was all really popular when I was a kid.
So did you breakdance?
Oh, God, no. Are you kidding? I would have looked. I'm like a skinny Jew. Like, that would have looked horrible.
But you were a gymnast, so you could have done
so more like a little gymnast. I was so not tough. And, you know, those kids were so, like, tough and street. And I was so, like, fake preppy Jew.
So no electric boogaloo or anything?
No, there wasn't. Although I tried, you know, I sort of looked better doing the steps that the girls were doing, like fan kicks and all of that.
But wait a minute, weren't you in Paula Abdul and Janet Jackson videos?
Yeah, I did. I did dance for them. I had gotten out of Juilliard. I dropped out, and I went. And I was doing a lot of theater dancing because that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a chorus boy. And so I was doing a lot of that. Ended up having kind of a bad relationship experience, frankly, my first one. I was 21 or whatever. And moved back to Los Angeles. I'd been living in New York. And I thought I was going to stop dancing. And I wanted to produce music videos. That was my big goal. And I had a friend who was producing a Janet Jackson video. And she convinced me to audition. And I got in. And then I did some work for her. And I did the Oscars for Paula Abdul and stuff like that. But that was something that, you know, like I said, I was already dancing professionally at that point. So that was just a job, you know.
Describe for us what you had to do in the Janet Jackson video.
Oh, tumble. I was doing so much gymnastics. My whole body was, like, racked with pain. I was like, what? We were on the Universal back lot. And I, on Mexico Street, and I was tumbling down that stupid street for about 7.5 straight hours into the morning. And when I tell you, I woke up and I could not move because it was cement. And I was like barefoot.
Oh,
it was the most brutal thing on the planet. But I was just a little gymnast boy at that point.
What was the song?
Escapade. And then I went out and I danced, and I also tumbled and danced on the American Music Awards for her, same song.
And for the Oscars?
For the Oscars, we were doing Paula Abdul. We were doing Under the Sea from The Little Mermaid. And I was like a lycra-clad flipping pirate and did the crab dance and all of that. So it was really funny.
You ended up choreographing a lot of videos. Like, what are some of the acts you choreographed for?
Well, I did a pretty popular Whitney Houston video called I'm Your Baby Tonight. I did Tony, Tony, Tony feels good. I did a song called The Jerk Out for the Time. I even sort of choreographed something, one of Herb Ritz's last videos. I worked with NSYNC doing some Charlie Chaplin stuff for the video Gone. I did like giant rock videos where girls were like on the top of giant scaffolding, throwing themselves around. I mean, it was crazy. Back in like the real heyday of like that kind of stuff. I worked a lot with Julian Temple, who was the director of Absolute Beginners. And he did the very famous Janet Jackson When I Think of You video where she goes through the town. And that was basically based on his opening shot of Absolute Beginners.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Adam Shankman, the choreographer and director of the new movie Hairspray. Before directing movies, he choreographed music videos and films, including Boogie Nights and Stuck on You. He got his start dancing with Janet Jackson and Paula Abdul. Hairspray stars Nikki Blonsky and several other newcomers, along with James Marsden, Michelle Pfeiffer, Queen Latifah, Christopher Walken, and John Travolta. Now, John Travolta is one of the stars of Hairspray. What impact did Saturday Night Fever have on you? You were, what, around 12 when it came out?
Yeah, I was young when Saturday Night Fever came out, but it was literally one of my father's favorite movies, and still is. And we saw it in the theaters a couple times, and I thought it was completely magical because not only was I entranced by the music and the dancing and how the music was used and how it was all pop music being used as a musical form that included the dancing, but then to have the dramatic content of it was mind-blowing to me, even at that age, you know. But, of course, I was like the 10-year-old that was sneaking into theaters to see all that jazz when I was 10. So, you know, I was a bit of an anomaly, but I was very impacted by Saturday Night Fever.
Now, one of the movies that you choreographed was Boogie Nights, which is such a great film. And there's a couple of, you know, like disco party scenes in that. And in one of the scenes, one of the earlier scenes, the dancing is kind of clumsy. Everybody's a little self-conscious, and they're not like particularly good dancers. But in the later scene, like after the main character, you know, Dirk Diggler, the Mark Wahlberg character, after he's gotten more self-confident, he's doing a real Travolta thing.
it's definitely a tip of the hat to Saturday Night Fever. In fact, I was friends with Lester Wilson, rest his soul, who choreographed Saturday Night Fever.
Oh.
He was a great man. And he had told me a story once that, I don't know if it's true, but he told me the story that the original step in Saturday Night Fever was not just the one hand going up, but it was two hands going up and then pointing down and two and up. And that Travolta somehow ended up being more comfortable with the single hand. So after Lester died and I was doing Boogie Nights, I said, you know what, I'm going to give Lester his original step back. And I did the two fingers up and down thing.
Oh, God, that's so great.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's it like when you're choreographing? There's that scene. And then before that, there's a scene where people are just kind of very amateurishly dancing. Did you choreograph that, or did you just say to everybody?
What you do is you give them a sort of a step vocabulary. You show them a bunch of steps, and then you don't polish them. And you kind of send them out on their own, and you make sure that that it's properly staged, and you work with the director to, you know, get the shape down with the camera, and then, you know, you just hope that the actors understand who their characters are and what they're supposed to be doing, how they are.
What were some of the movie musicals or Broadway musicals that helped create, like, your fantasy life or your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to sound really, really odd, but the first musical that I saw live was Promises, Promises, and Michael Bennett did that, and it was...
That's a Burt Bacharach musical.
It's a Bacharach musical that was based on the Neil Simon play, The Apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Orbach and Jill O'Hara were in it. And it's just, it was just fabulous to me. I could not believe how amazing it was. And I really grew up on Sound of Music and West Side Story, My Fair Lady, the classics.
Speaking of West Side Story, I thought the opening shot of your movie Hairspray was a shout out to the opening shot of West Side Story because it's this aerial view over the city.
Yeah, well, but it came through the clouds, so I comboed it with Sound of Music. It was Sound of Music into West Side Story. I have a lot of those in Hairspray. When she's on the garbage truck, that's like the tugboat from Funny Girl. And when I had her hair also like in Funny Girl at the end of Welcome to the 60s, and You know, there's a lot of shout outs at the musical. Somebody was talking about in Without Love when he's singing into the picture. It's like, dear Mr. It's like you made me love you when Judy Garland is singing to Clark Gable. And, you know, there's a lot of winks in this one.
Now, I could see, like, when you're growing up, if you're particularly, you know, in previous decades, like when you're growing up, that adults or teachers might say to you, well, being gay is going to hold you back from accomplishing this certain thing in life. But when your goal is to do, like, musicals, like, no one can really say, you're gay, you'll never get your crack at doing musicals. Do you know what I'm saying?
True words have never been spoken, but I had a very, very reverse experience of coming out, which was that my parents actually outed me to me. I was dating girls, and they were divorced at the time, and right before I left to move to Minneapolis to join the theater company, they both individually kind of pulled me aside and said, you know, by the way, you're gay and we love you. And I was like, what are you talking about? This isn't happening to me. What are you saying? You know, I guess it was kind of because I wasn't doing anything with anybody. So it was just something they felt about me. And I think that as sweet as they were, they wanted me to be happy. And that was of utmost importance to them. And I don't know. Listen, when I was 3 years old, I had like a sexual identity crisis. And my parents put me with a doctor who I guess tried to kind of reprogram me. And they felt like that was a big mistake. So, because it kind of messed with my head and my self-esteem. So that was, I think, their loving way of saying it's all good.
Your mother's a therapist, right?
Yeah. And a good one, actually.
What kind of sexual identity crisis did you have at the age of 3?
You know, I was 3 years old and I was running around doing, you know, singing The Sound of Music, wearing my dad's T-shirts and belting them. And, you know, so they had a waist, you know. And you know, when I was, instead of playing Tony, I was playing Maria. Or actually, I was playing Anita in West Side Story because she had the sexier songs. But I was 3, you know, and it's as sad as it sounds, it's true. But it genuinely was a phase. But, you know, I think for my parents in 1967, and they were really young when they had me, I think it was just nerve-wracking. So they put me with a therapist in a program at UCLA who was just supposed to kind of observe me. But what they didn't know is that he was actually trying to reprogram me.
You know, in your career as a choreographer, you've not only choreographed dances, but you've choreographed like non-dance movies where the choreography, I guess, is more about physical comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, like George of the Jungle, you're talking about?
Oh, I'm thinking specifically of Stuck on You, which is
Stuck on You, there's a huge dance number at the end with Meryl Streep.
Oh, that's true.
I was actually in it.
I
play the, like, waiter on her left. I was like, I'm not going to miss this opportunity. I'm dancing with Meryl Streep, damn it.
Okay.
I did that final number. But, like, in George of the Jungle, there were a couple little dance scenes, but I was on George of the Jungle for, like, 5 months. I started dealing with wire work with Brendan Fraser and then doing rock climbing and trampoline work, gymnastic stuff. And then when the movie started, he decided that he wanted me there all the time, literally just to watch the physicality of his performance. Because I did a lot of those movies that were cartoons to movies. Like I did Flintstones and Casper and George the Jungle. And, you know, it's like all sort of maintaining the integrity of the movement vocabulary of the cartoon while giving it life. It's a very funky business, but I did a lot of it.
You know, you were telling us earlier about the video that you had to do, which required you tumbling for about 7 hours on concrete.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any injuries that give you, like, recurring pain from all the dancing that you've done over the years?
Yeah, I have really bad pain in my left hip, like lower back stuff. It's totally chronic. And then, unbelievably, the month before I started to choreograph Hairspray, I was actually hanging out with some friends and dancing around, and I slipped on a spilled cocktail, and I tore every part of my knee.
Oh.
After all those years of dancing, LCL, MCL, ACL, and my MCL and LCL healed. But I still don't have an ACL, and I choreographed all of Hairspray with one very injured knee.
Wow. You know, dancers amaze me because, like, on the one hand, when you're a dancer, you seem to, like, defy gravity and do all these things that bodies normal bodies were never meant to do. And at the same time, I know dancers, like what you were just saying, end up with injuries and are walking around in pain. Do you ever get angry with your body for hurting, you know, for being vulnerable?
Yeah, I get really angry with my body for hurting because, you know, no one warns you about these things. And I also wonder, could I have made it any different by stretching more or by not doing that stupid stunt? I remember when I was doing the Academy Awards, they were making me throw, stupidly, this giant back layout flip that landed in the front splits, and I broke five of my toes. I broke three of my toes doing it, and it was like the first week of rehearsal. And so I went on with my toes taped and went on to do four more weeks of rehearsal and dance the entire show. And, of course, never even performed the trick. But, by the way, I would have performed it anyway because it's just what you do. Dancers are the most the show must go on people out there. They're the least paid and the hardest workers, for sure.
Well, Adam Shankman, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was an extraordinary pleasure to be here.
Adam Shankman choreographed and directed the new movie Hairspray. Coming up, a 1988 interview with John Waters about writing and directing the original version of Hairspray. This is Fresh Air.